Welcome to Session 7 of Depression and Anxiety Recovery. Today we're going to be helping you to grow from even trauma and losses in your life. And we live in a messed up world. We need to recognize that in this imperfect world, life is going to be unfair at times. And we are going to be treated sometimes severely in an unfair way. We will go through losses that are of no part of ourselves, but just from living in a world with disease and where death can reign. And we need to know how to find purpose after trauma or loss. When we go through a loss, grief can occur. And grief is actually a good thing. It helps us to heal from losses and trauma. It's an emotional reaction that follows the loss of someone or something of great value. And mourning is the psychological process that occurs when you experience loss. That psychological process is crucial. Many people try to avoid the mourning aspect of loss, and they lose out on being able to heal, and it complicates things significantly. So what types of losses are we dealing with? Loss of social status. That can be a big thing. We have had a number of individuals that we have treated that actually tried to end their life because of their social status going down. Economic recessions and stock market failures and business losses, and there's all sorts of things that can bring about unexpected financial loss. And then a loss of social status. You can lose the friends that you once had. Even relatives, sometimes you can lose in this process. And for some, it's been too overwhelming for them, and they thought they needed to try to end their life. Of course, the fact that I'm seeing them afterwards is a sign that they were not successful, fortunately. And so we were able to help them back up and grow from those losses and heal from them. Loss of a body part, that's always very significant, and it does inhibit you from being as successful afterwards. The ability to maintain a physical function. This is one of the reasons why we need to know how to do this, because as we age, we might just naturally, as a part of aging, lose some aspects of a physical function. And how are we going to relate to that? Loss of a job. We've had individuals come through our program where they had lost their job many years ago, but they were talking about it as if it happened yesterday. They could remember who said what, how it went down, and how unfair it was. And that's a sign, actually, that they hadn't healed, that it was still so fresh in their mind, and it was still inhibiting their emotional success. Loss of a home, that can occur through a number of different ways, but that is always a big one, particularly if you've had a fire and all of those memories are gone. That's a significant loss as well. And then loss of loved ones, either through divorce or relationship breakups or through death. We've had a number of individuals come through our program that have actually lost one spouse to divorce and another spouse to death. Almost without exception, every one of those have told me which one was worse. Anyone want to guess? Divorce. Divorce was worse. And of course, when you get married, you're actually making a vow until what? Death do us part, but you're both still living and you are divorcing. And this is a very traumatic on the individuals, or particularly usually more traumatic on one individual than another, but it is actually traumatic on both individuals as that vow is no longer in place. And so we need to know how to be able to handle these losses. Now, those are more common that we've just mentioned, but the last one is one that most people don't talk about. But yet it requires the same healing process that we're going to be discussing here today, and that is loss of a vision. With loss of a vision, you just knew this was going to happen somehow, some way, and now you realize no way is it going to happen. That vision is not going to see the light of day. And that requires a grieving and a mourning process as well as a healing process. Then a lot of what we're talking about here tonight also is necessary to heal from traumas. The traumas of betrayal, the trauma of rape. I don't think we've ever had a program that we have had all the participants there where we haven't had at least one individual have this in their background. This is so common, unfortunately, today. Murder. We've had individuals come to our program that had their loved one murdered in front of them. Significant trauma. Suicide. Suicide is traumatic on friends and family members. In fact, we've had individuals come to our program that have told me the reason why they didn't actually end their life, because they were wanting to, was because they didn't want to do that to their loved ones. Do you think that's a good reason? That actually is a good reason. There's other good reasons as well not to do it, but that actually is a good reason, because you will cause trauma in your loved ones for really the rest of their life as a result of ending your own life. Being harassed continually by family members or partners. We might call this complex PTSD, where it just doesn't seem to go away. And that is, of course, emotionally traumatic as well. And then there's other traumas, such as flunking out of school. You knew you were going to be a nurse, for instance, and you just couldn't make it with the intense school. And that can be traumatic. And then there's unfortunate events that can also add to the traumas. But we need to keep those unfortunate events in perspective. I practiced for many years in a town right across the Red River from Texas called Ardmore, Oklahoma. And every year it seemed that we were having to treat people in Ardmore for the trauma of the Dallas Cowboys football team not making it to the championship game. So, and I sometimes would have to ask these people, you know, does your brother play for the team? Is your dad the coach? No, you know, but they talk about these people as if they are. And it is, of course, a hype, but we need to keep these things in perspective, and we'll talk about how to be able to deal with those type of unfortunate events as well. Fortunately, it's simpler than some of these others. Well, when I was in medical school taking a psychiatry, I was told that when you lose a spouse, it's going to take you a year to recover from that. The studies actually weren't well designed at that point. And now we know that widows and widowers were less likely to regain the same level of happiness they had before the loss, especially if their marriages were what? Were satisfying. Most people who lost a spouse but did not remarry took about how many years to recover emotionally? 8 years. That's big. And this is sometimes the healing process can take a rather long period of time, but it's still important to undergo that healing process in order, in the right way, so that we can grow from these losses. We do have names, of course, like widow and widower if you have lost a spouse, but there's no name if you have lost a child to death. That actually can be even more traumatic. It's not supposed to occur that way. You know, parents are supposed to die first and not children. But it's very traumatic on a family and even on relationships, marriage relationships, when a child is lost to death. And it's particularly important to pay attention in this presentation as well. In fact, losing all of these people to death reminds me of an individual that went through a physical health program that we were holding in Texas. As I mentioned, we were in Ardmore, Oklahoma, and I was asked to speak in Texas quite a bit across the Red River. And the first book that we came out was not really a mental health book. It was a physical health book. As you know, I'm an internal medicine doctor and deal with adult diseases of the internal organs. And so we were talking about heart disease, lifestyle treatments for heart disease and cancer and autoimmune disease and arthritis and osteoporosis and these sorts of things. And we put it together in a book with all the scientific evidence called Proof Positive. And so in East Texas, they invited me over to have a Proof Positive Health Summit. And coming to this summit was a 100-year-old woman walking on her own power, taking notes about how she could become healthier. And I was very intrigued by her. She didn't get out a whole lot. And at lunchtime, they introduced me to her. And the news media heard that she was there. And she was kind of a prominent woman in that town, also a historical figure. And so the news anchor actually went out and bought her a 100-candle cake. And at the end of that lunch, the cameras were flashing as she blew out 100 candles. And then the news anchor put a microphone under her chin and said, "Tell us, ma'am, what's special about being 100? And right away, she said, "No peer pressure." And I smiled and laughed at that as well. But I started to ask her questions about that. I said, "You know, you had a lot of friends and family, I'm sure, around when you were 40 years old. Any of those around now?" "No," she said. She had lost children to disease of old age. She had lost her husband. I said, "How about at 60? Any of your good friends when you were 60, are they around now?" She says, "No, they're all gone." But yet, one of the reasons why she had done so well, health-wise, was because she knew how to heal from losses. And so we often don't put that in there as an attribute in longevity, but it is very important in longevity in how we're going to handle losses and can we go through the right process to heal. So when we go through a loss, it's important to utilize the tool of cognitive behavioral therapy. With cognitive behavioral therapy, we're not just trying to think positive thoughts, we're trying to think true and accurate thoughts. So tell me if, after a serious loss, if this is reality or distortion to say this. I'm losing an important part of my life. That's reality. That's true. And it can be very healthy to actually say and think that. How about this? My world has ended. Your world has not ended. The world's still going around. But when you say that, you're actually thinking it, and it will cause you excess in emotional distress and even cause some dysfunction. I've heard this one as well. I can't live without her. Is that reality? The person's living as they're saying the words, but yet that's what's in their thoughts. They're saying it. And those things will end up defeating you emotionally and even functionally. How about this? I will miss the companionship and love that we share. That is truthful. And it can enhance your overall meaning of life. And it's also tender and realistic and desirable. And it can add depth to the overall situation and help with the healing aspect. So there are stages of grief that occur. And one of those stages, particularly when it's a sudden loss or trauma, is the stage of shock and disbelief. With this stage, the events seem unreal. There's a feeling of numbness that occurs. There's a denial that the loss is happening. There's crying and screaming, as well as anger that can occur. It is actually best for this stage to be as short as possible. In reality, can get us out of that stage, even though the reality is of a serious nature in reflecting upon the loss or the trauma. Stage two is the stage of developing awareness. This is a much longer stage, and it can last anywhere from 3 to 12 months. At this time, you're preoccupied with the loss, meaning that even around your daily activities, your mind continues to go back to it. That's normal. Situational anxiety can occur, not necessarily a diseased anxiety state, but it is normal to be anxious for those 3 months. Restlessness can occur, even difficulty sleeping can occur. And then there's other possible characteristics, such as loss of appetite, digestive problems, fatigue, anger, guilt, identification with the lost loved one, which is frequent as well. And when it goes to the 12-month point, there's usually a depressive response on the anniversary of the loss. These are all part of the stage called developing awareness. And of course, you have a clearer awareness of the loss as this stage goes on and you recognize the consequences of the loss. The good news about stage two is, although long in duration, you should gradually feel better. Does it say day by day? Does it say week by week? It says month by month. It's important because of the mood swings that can occur with stage two. It's important that you don't evaluate yourself day by day or week by week, but month by month. And month by month, you should be getting better. That's something that should be measurably improving. If you're not, you're stuck in the process and you need to go back to some of the things we're going to be speaking about in regards to healing, or get some professional help in regards to the healing. Stage three is the stage of resolution. This is when disappointments begin to turn into appointments. In other words, you're growing from the loss and some positive things are now occurring. This will start anywhere from 3 to 12 months after the loss. You incorporate new habits, and positive lifestyle changes can often accompany this positive stage of resolution. You gradually take charge of your life and resolve the loss through activity, readjustment, and education. There was a very interesting study done on a group of men that had all experienced loss of a loved one. And these 40 men that were studied had diseased immune systems before the loss. So they all had a diseased immune system. They knew they were compromised, and they had even developed infections that other people tend not to develop as a result of this compromised immune system. And these men were studied from 4 to 9 years after they had experienced tragic loss. I like these more longer-term studies so that we can learn about the effects of grief. 65% of the men had engaged in a thoughtful consideration of the meaning of their loved one's death. Is that a good thing? Yeah. It actually is a good thing. After you go through a loss, go through a thoughtful consideration of the meaning of that. We call that cognitive processing. Grief over a loss of a loved one is often followed by introspection and a reaffirmation of life's worth and meaning. And so out of that group of 40, 65% had undergone this cognitive processing. But out of that group, there were three different conclusions or three different outcomes. Cognitive processing can lead individuals to one of three conclusions at least. But for in this group, group one, their loved one's death only emphasized the negative aspects of life. How do you think that group did? They did not do well. Their immune systems got worse. Group two, others simply accepted the death and moved on. How do you think they did? You would think they would have done significantly better. I would have thought so too, but in this study, there was no improvement of group two over group one. It's not just simply accepting the death and moving on. Group three, the loss of a loved one, led them to a newfound respect for life and a significant desire to improve their personal life. And they committed to those life changes to improve their life as a result of this newfound respect for life. How do you think they did? They actually did quite well. Compared with other subjects, men who discovered this new meaning in life showed significant improvement in immune function and a significant advantage in long-term survival. Now, what was surprising to me was their immune systems actually improved. Their diseased immune systems improved as a result of going into group three, and they had a significant advantage in long-term survival. What does this mean? A newfound sense of purpose after loss or trauma can boost your body's immune system as it also bolsters the spirit. So in overcoming loss, it's important to recognize your life has not ended. There's not a need to go into the hopelessness and self-pity and things that can get you down. You need to put the loss in perspective. And through every loss and trauma, we can learn something from it. And ask yourself, what have I learned? And if I haven't learned anything, what can I learn through this process? And then make a commitment to follow through the five tasks that we'll be teaching you for healthy grieving. Healthy grieving is not something that people do naturally. This is not part of our innate being to know how to handle loss. Worden conceptualizes the grief process as task. Worden is a psychological expert that has looked at the grieving process and healing from it. And tasks imply there is work to do. Some people are a little fearful of that. Wait a minute, I've already gone through this loss, and now you're giving me work to do? But it actually is empowering to the mourner who feels so helpless. Often we think there's nothing that we can do. But actually there is something we can do. And it's not just time. Sometimes people will say, well, you know, just give it time. Time does not always heal wounds, but working through them over time does. And so as we work through these tasks over time, these wounds can be healed and we can become even healthier in the process. So let's go through these five tasks. First task is to accept the reality of the loss. You might communicate about the loss to others. You might even have a mourning ritual, which is actually a healthy thing. Sometimes after losing a loved one, I've met people that say, no, I don't want to go to the funeral. I don't want to go to the memorial. I don't want to remember them being dead. I want to remember them how they were alive. But even as you see that dead body, you only think about the live memories. And it does help to bring a closure to have those mourning rituals. Let me give you an example of how important it is to accept the reality of the loss. We had a woman that had gone through the same program you're going through, this community program, and she had been depressed most of her life. She had been on medicines most of her life. And she went through the community program and she improved so much that she was able to get off her medicine. Now, I was also her physician. She went through this program in Ardmore, Oklahoma. And as a physician, I had the privilege, once she got better, of seeing her and weaning her off this medicine and seeing how well she did. And I was excited for her, and she was excited. She had probably the best year of her life after getting through this program. But then disaster struck. 1 year later, her only biological son age 19, was found dead in bed. And she was the one who found him. He was supposed to be at work at a tire manufacturing plant. And he didn't show up to work. They were calling. And finally, she was called, and she was the only one who had a key to his apartment. And so she walks in that apartment to see what's happening, and there he is. He is dead in bed. And right away, she calls the paramedics, and they come, and they try to do CPR on him, and things are flying around the room. And then finally, the head paramedic touches his body more firmly and says, you know, this is a cold body. He has been like this for a while. And so they stopped the code, and she was totally beside herself. Talking about that stage of shock and disbelief, she was in that stage. So she goes, ends up in the emergency room. Paramedics actually bring her to the emergency room. And I'm doing a surgical procedure that afternoon in the operating room. And so a call comes through, and of course it comes on the speaker system, and all the nurses and medical assistants know the HIPAA laws and that they can't say anything about this, but the person's identified, her name, she's also, the situation was identified. She had lost her only biological son, and she is beside herself. She is saying that Dr. Nedley is going to be able to heal her son, that Dr. Nedley will be able to bring him back, that Dr. Nedley's an ICU doctor and will help him. And then she's also saying other things that don't make sense at all. And so the emergency room doctor says, I would like to load her up with a bunch of IV lorazepam and admit her to your service. What do you think I said? I said, no, sir, I'm not going to accept that. Well, the ER doctor started to lose his temper at me at that point and said, well, what do you want me to do? I can't keep her down here like this. And I said, yes, I would like you to keep her there. And I will have someone go over and talk to her in just a few minutes. And fortunately, that afternoon, our office manager who had run her community program, and they had gotten very close in the process, is what often happens in these community programs. Our office manager came over to the emergency room and began to talk to our patient in distress. And as she was saying, I know Dr. Nedley's going to be able to heal him in ICU. You might think it was cruel, but it was actually helpful because she was skilled and trained. Our community director said, no, your son is gone. What did you like about your son? And she would talk about all the things that she liked about her son. And then she would go back and say, well, they're going to take him to Oklahoma City. I think he'll be able to be healed there and brought back. Well, he is going to Oklahoma City because there's no forensic pathology lab in Ardmore. They want to find out why he died. But how do you want your son remembered at his funeral? And so she would talk about the memories and how she would want him remembered. And it was about a 20-minute conversation, a very compassionate, friendly conversation. But just 20 minutes later, I was surprised at the time, the ER doc calls me up. I'm still not quite through with the first procedure. And he says, I don't know who it was that you brought over there to talk to this lady, but she is oriented. She knows which end is up. She's doing much better. She's calmed down. I'd like to go ahead and send her home. I said, you can go ahead and send her home, but make sure she sees me in about 2 or 3 days in the office. And he said, sure, I'll make sure that happens. So task one that was important was to have this woman accept the what? The reality of the loss. Task two is to work through the pain. Don't avoid the pain, but be honest about how you feel. And it's often best to write about the loss. Let's go back to our patient. Fast forward 2 to 3 days, and now she's in the clinic, and she's seeing me, and she is talking about all of this incessantly. Why is she talking about it? In part because the investigator is going to come tomorrow and start talking to her about what this room was like. She was the first one to go in there. They don't know why he died. And so she knows a lot of questions are going to be coming up. And she's saying, I can't remember precisely how things were in the room because the paramedics began to throw things around. And was it this way or was it that way? And she was just going through this rumination and fast talking. And I said, ma'am, it would be best, actually, if you would sit down like a journalist and just write the facts that you know are true. And studies have actually shown that to be helpful. When we have trauma or loss, if we journal about it like a journalist, we're much less likely to go into PTSD. But when we're thinking about it and ruminating over and over again, that's when we can have triggers later on that bring all of this back and we have to relive that whole thing again. And so Teresa did exactly that. She just wrote down the things that she knew were facts and she put it away in a safe place. And when those investigators came over the next day, she just pulled out that paper and said, these are the facts. Do you have any questions? And she avoided the whole PTSD thing despite this very traumatic loss in her life. So in working through the pain, self-care is important. Of course, I had to ask her, are you exercising? Guess what? She hadn't exercised for 3 days after this. She also wasn't getting adequate sleep. She wasn't even going to bed on time. And this is crucially important to still go to bed on time, get adequate sleep, eat a balanced diet, and do not stop exercising. This is very important for brain health to overcome a loss and trauma. Also, you want to maintain your social ties. Studies have shown poor social support to be more closely related to later depression than even a history of torture. This is a pretty amazing study, but a lot of people, after going through losses, they isolate. And then they complain that my friends, I thought they were friends, they're not even coming over. They're not talking to me. Well, let me just tell you, your friends are not psychologists. They're not grief experts. If you're isolating, they think that you want to isolate and that you want to heal apart from them. But it's your job to actually go out and reach out to your friends. And your friends will be very glad to listen, to be there as a support if you allow them to do that. But if you don't allow them to do that, your outcome is actually worse than if you've been tortured. And that's one of the most severe psychological outcomes, is for people to have undergone torture. Also, it's very important to maintain spiritual ties. We've run across individuals that totally drop any of their spiritual connections and ties. You know, insurance companies call these losses acts of God. And so we have this tendency to drop out on the spiritual side of things. But studies show it's very important to maintain the spiritual ties. If you're doing church attendance beforehand, it's good to have that spiritual tie to help with the healing part, even in enhancing the frontal lobe. Watch out for nonsense arguments. We've had individuals who have lost arms and legs with accidents, and they'll tell me, if only I would have left the house 2 minutes earlier, I would have not had this accident, and I would be able to walk today. Now, do we really know that to be true? No, we don't. We can't be fortune teller errors and know for sure if that's true. But why do we call it a nonsense argument? We call it a nonsense argument because it doesn't bring back your arms and legs to go through that argument. And when you continue to think that, you're much less likely to be able to do something healthy about it. So resulting in no practical good is the outcome of these nonsense arguments. However, I've also had an individual in particular that I'm thinking about that lost arms and legs at an accident. And this woman was so interested in becoming a pilot that she actually devised, and with her innovative creativity, ways to get around her lack of arms and legs, and she became a pilot without arms and legs. And I can tell you, she did that because she wasn't doing these nonsense arguments. She wasn't ruminating about that sort of thing. She realized, it is what it is. Now, how can I still accomplish my goals? How can I make the best of it? During the process of healing from loss, we can develop a very positive character strength trait that helps us, called patience. What is patience? Patience is our capacity to endure hardship, difficulty, or inconvenience without complaint. That's what Rodgett's Dictionary defines it as. And the American Heritage Dictionary says, patience is the power of suffering with fortitude, uncomplaining endurance of evils or wrongs, such as toil, pain, poverty, insult, oppression, calamity, etc. When we develop patience, it is a very positive thing for our brain, and it actually can draw us very close to many others. After task two, which is not avoiding the pain, but working through the pain and going through self-care, the next step or next task is to emotionally relocate the loss. This does not mean that the loss is forgotten. Reminiscing helps, but you can build on current or new relationships this way when you relocate it and develop new routines and find new interests and continue old ones. So how do we emotionally relocate the loss? We're called upon in life to deal with problems. And how well we solve problems has to do with how well our life is going to be and what a positive influence will be to our entire communities. And there's really three types of problems. First type of problem is what we call a practical problem. What is a practical problem? This is a problem that makes it more or most difficult for you to achieve your goals. That would be undergoing a loss that is a serious loss for you. It's making it more or most difficult for you to achieve your goals. It might be a traumatic experience that you have suffered from. But along with that group of problems, practical problems, very often comes an emotional problem. What is the emotional problem that accompanies it? It is the emotions that come as a result of that practical problem. And so you recognize that I can't achieve these goals very easily anymore. And so you have this emotional reaction to it. And then there's a third type of problem that I call an imagined problem. It's not really completely imagined, but an imagined problem does not inhibit you at all from achieving your goals. But you're just upset about the idea of the situation. For instance, what would be an imagined problem? The Dallas Cowboys football team not making it to the championship game. That doesn't inhibit you at all from achieving your goals, but you're just upset about the idea of the situation. And you may be even upset about the officials in that game, which is often common in those that have these imagined problems in their life. If it's an imagined problem, we just need to recognize it's not going to inhibit me at all in being able to achieve my goals. So let's not get emotionally involved in this negativity because of being upset of the idea of the situation. But what about if it's a real practical problem? It does inhibit you from achieving your goals. How you emotionally relocate the loss is this way. I'm going to have this bad problem, whether I'm miserable about it or not, so I might as well give up the misery. When we have that attitude, it helps us to feel more towards calm, and it puts our frontal lobe in a better position to do something wise about it. And so we might call it this, or we might say it this way. It is what it is. Now, how can I make the best of it? And that way we have less problems. It's better to have just one problem, a practical problem, than two problems. The practical problem and the emotional reaction causing more problems on top of that. And so we can minimize our problems and we can be in a much better position to do something better. And that's why we call it emotionally relocating the loss. And notice the positive things that can happen as a result of that. Once we go through the emotional relocation, we adjust to the environment with the loss. And it's much easier to do that if we've relocated it. Don't make dramatic life-changing decisions while we're adjusting. Build on current or new relationships. Develop new routines that can be healthy. Find new interests and continue old ones. Identify the roles that the lost person or thing played in your life. Then find out how these functions can best be met now. And once we're through this, then we're ready for task five, and that is to grow from the loss. Don't settle for just surviving. A lot of people think, I just need to survive. Now, if you've gone through tasks 1 through 4, you are going to be able to grow. Honor the lost person or thing by growing from the pain and reflect on what you've learned or gained through the loss and let life become more meaningful. Those were the men who had undergone serious loss but decided that they were going to have life become more meaningful, and as a result, they grew from the loss. So the question is, have you grown from your loss? And if the answer is no, what are some ways you can grow from the loss? When we're going through the task for grieving, there's a sign that we're not doing it healthfully. And one of those signs might be when we start having feelings of worthlessness. That's a sign that we've gone too far and we're stuck in the process. We might need professional help, or we might need to go back to the workbook session and go through and see where we're stuck in these 5 tasks. It's very unhealthy as well if we have suicidal ideation. Even if we've lost loved ones, to think that we're better off dead is a sign that we're not healing. And so that needs also professional help, or to go back and really start working these tasks. If you have grossly impaired functioning, it's possible and normal that you're going to have impaired functioning for a month or so after a serious loss. But if your functioning is not improving month by month and it's still grossly impaired, that is a sign that grief has gone too far. And this is not just mourning anymore. We're now into major depression when these things occur. In 2001, I had the privilege of helping the residents of New York City recover from the World Trade Center disaster. One of the most disastrous days in American history was when those 2 planes flew into the World Trade Center. 4 months earlier, I was on the top of that World Trade Center. I actually have a picture of it. And that was when I was giving a talk, not at that time per se, but I was giving a series of talks to New York on their mental health. And it was entitled Preparing for Grief and Depression. I was invited by one of the city health officials in to speak about this. And a few months later, our book, Depression, The Way Out, was printed on the East Coast in Providence, Rhode Island. The last book came off the press an hour before the World Trade Center was hit. New York realized those books were all available. They had known about me, and they asked me to be asked me and my team, the Nedley Health team, to come into Ground Zero and be the first team outside of New York to put on the public grief and depression recovery program. It was quite an honor and a privilege to serve the New York City residents. We heard their stories. We heard about their loss of home, their loss of job, their loss of loved ones, their loss of workmates. It was almost like a war zone down there. And we were able to cook for them. We were able to coach them in regards to circadian rhythm and sleep and the best diet to make enough melatonin and serotonin. And we put on the first public grief and depression recovery program. You can still find that if you go online with the memorabilia of 9/11 and that series. As much of an honor and a privilege, and how healthy that was for me to be able to help them. 1 year later, I went through a disaster that I did very poorly, at least initially. My father, who I was very close to, you've heard about him, he had given up sugar, he had started exercise. After that, he was transformed into a new man. He was a wonderful counselor to all of his five children. And of course, his wife, my mother, loved him very dearly. And he was just a great guy to be around. Whenever I had a problem or an issue or wondered about something, I could always give him a call and he would objectively give me perspective and then always say, "Neil, it's your decision." But giving that perspective made it a lot easier to be able to make wise decisions. And the same would be true for my other brothers and sisters. We loved hanging out with my mom and dad, especially my father. And now I was coming home from Kiev, Ukraine, after speaking to a group of doctors. My father had a cold, bad cold, and he thought his doctor's son is coming home. As you remember, he's an engineer. And so he'll just wait till his son comes home. But it turned out to be too late. As I'm coming home, he's being admitted to the intensive care unit and having a ventilator put on him because he can't breathe anymore. And he has rip-roaring pneumonia. I go to the intensive care unit and thinking, well, the antibiotic should help this. But 2 days later, he was far worse, going into multi-system organ failure. And then the cultures came back showing this wasn't garden variety pneumonia. This was a serious pneumonia called Legionnaire's disease. We don't even know where he got it from. But a few days later, this man who I thought would live to 100 and I would have many more years with him had lost his life. We were devastated. A month later, I was still devastated. I couldn't believe it had happened. And a friend of mine lost his dad around the same time in the same hospital. And I happened to run across him about a month later, and I said, "Friend," I actually called him by his name, but we won't say his name here. "Friend, how are you doing? You lost your father the same time I did." And he said, "I'm doing pretty well." I said, "Really? I'm not. I can't sleep. It's just, I can't get it off my mind. I can't believe he's gone. I can't call him up to get any help or counsel. This voice is forever gone." And he says, "Well, you need to understand a little bit. I think my dad was a little different than your dad." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, my dad was an alcoholic. He was abusive to my mother. He was very crude. He really wasn't a good man. I feel bad for him. He had died from cirrhosis of the liver in the hospital. I feel bad for him, but it's not really any great loss for us." And I thought, what would I have rather had? A father like my friends and have an easy time a month later after his death? Or would I have rather had a rough time and had the loving father that I had? I think I know what most of you would have chosen, and I would have still chosen the loving father. And I realize there's another side of loss. And that other side of loss is love. If we would live in a world where there would be no losses whatsoever, we would actually be in a world where there's no love that's possible. And I would much rather live in a world where love is possible, even though we might have devastating losses, than the other way around. Love, of course, is a voluntary act. My father was loving us because it was voluntary. He was self-sacrificing so much in his love towards us and my mother as well. And freedom of choice is necessary to choose love And I'd rather be in a world where we have the freedom to choose to love or not to love. And that can help us to put these losses in perspective. So I would encourage you, make a commitment to understand and engage in these five tasks of healthy grieving and grow from your loss. How did I grow from my loss? I realized my father had spiritual connections that I didn't have. And the reason why he was a wonderful counselor was also because of the spiritual aspect of his life. And so I made a commitment to embrace the spiritual aspect of my father's life. And I have been able to grow significantly from that loss. I know there are ways that you can grow from every loss that you've had, as well as losses you can have in the future. And our brains can actually become healthier, and we, in the process of going through loss, can become more compassionate and more patient with others. Thank you very much.